Scott, thank you for leading us in those songs. Let me invite you this morning, if you have your Bibles with you, to open them to the book of Exodus, chapter 35. Someone mentioned last week that we have skipped a really important part of the book of Exodus as we've been moving through our studies. We left out the Ten Commandments. We're not leaving it out, but we're going to treat it in greater detail. And this fall, as we customarily do here at Sunset, for we have our sermons tied in with all of our adult classes for our focus study, we're going to be looking in a very detailed way at the Ten Commandments. So we're not leaving them out. We're just waiting until the end of our study. And this fall, we're going to go through the Ten Commandments in a week-by-week fashion. If you visit New York City, there is one skyscraper there that is not very significant, at least not when compared to so many of the other massive buildings of great height. It's called the Flatiron Building. Some of you have seen it. It's triangular in shape. And it was built by a man named Daniel Burnham. There's a plaque there on that building. The thing that's important about the Flatiron Building is Daniel Burnham is the man who invented the skyscraper. And that was the first tall building that was ever built on this continent. If you visit Chicago, you'll see in parts of town a number of old houses, but they are on the historic guide there in the city because they were designed and built by a man named Frank Lloyd Wright, the prairie style of architecture. God is the one who was the architect and the designer of the tabernacle, and he gave very detailed instructions of how that tabernacle was to be built, its dimensions, the materials that would go in it. But do any of you know who it was that actually headed up all of the design work, who actually did the molding and the making of the materials that went into that tabernacle? Here in Exodus chapter 35, we're introduced to these two men, the artisans that did that. Their names were Bezalel and Aholiab. Near the end of chapter 35, beginning there in verse 30, we're introduced to these two men. Follow along, if you will, there in those verses. It says, "Then Moses, in verse 30, said to the Israelites, 'See, the Lord has chosen Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, ability, and knowledge in all kinds of crafts, to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze, to cut and set stones, to work in wood, and to engage in all kinds of artistic craftsmanship. And he has given both him and Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach of the tribe of Dan, the ability to teach others. He has filled them with skill to do all kinds of work as craftsmen, designers, embroiderers in blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen, and weavers, all of them master craftsmen and designers. So Bezalel, Aholiab, and every skilled person to whom the Lord has given skill and ability to know how to carry out all the work of constructing the sanctuary are to do the work just as the Lord has commanded.'" So Moses called these men together. The text goes on to say that they asked the people to contribute materials for the building of the tabernacle. And you'll remember when the Israelites left Egypt, the text says they plundered the Egyptians. They asked the Egyptians for gifts of gold and silver and jewelry and fine clothing and linen and material. And the Egyptians were so in fear, so in awe of all that they had experienced through the plagues, that they gladly showered gifts upon these people as they left the land. And now God asked the people to give for the building of the tabernacle. And they were so generous in their giving that they had to be asked to stop giving. They had given too much, more than was needed for the construction of the tabernacle. Now, the text goes on also to describe the construction of the tabernacle itself with its 10 curtains of linen, with its 11 curtains of woven goat's hair, with its 50 golden clasps that held these curtains in place, and the frames that held the whole structure in place made of acacia wood. In chapter 37, Bezalel is named as the one who goes on to make the furniture that would go inside the tabernacle. He was the one who actually built and overlaid with gold the Ark of the Covenant. He was the one who crafted the cherubim that were there on top of that Ark of the Covenant. They were made of gold, all one piece, the entire lid of the Ark of the Covenant and the two molded cherubim there. He also made the table of the showbread. He also made the golden lampstand that stood there in the tabernacle. Now, I'm grateful that we have this account of these special servants who were gifted with their hands. I am in awe of those who can create things and make things like this, because I missed out when that kind of gift was passed around. I am not particularly good at designing and drawing and creating and making things with my hands. But this gift is a gift from God, and it's just as important as the gift of speaking or the gift of teaching or any other gift that God has given to His people. Notice again in chapter 35, there in verse 31, that these gifts do come from God. It says, "And He has filled him," speaking there of Bezalel, "has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, ability, and knowledge, and all kinds of crafts." So God specially gifted these men, at least on this occasion, for the building of the tabernacle. There are several things that I hope we can notice about this. These men who were so gifted could have used their gifts in a variety of ways, but they used what they had, what they were given by God, in a very unselfish way. They poured untold hours of labor into that tabernacle. It really became a labor of love from these men. I'm grateful for those who have demonstrated this very same spirit right here in this congregation. Those of you who are gifted with the ability to use your hands, who have done that. We have a group of women here who supplies an endless supply of all kinds of wonderful dishes, pies, cakes, casseroles, all kinds of demonstration of love when people lose family members, when there are special needs, when there are potlucks, and you, all you have to do is say, "We need some more good food," and here it comes again and again and again. We have those in this congregation who have been gifted with their hands, who have done all kinds of small things around this building, from the little racks that hold your cards on the end of the pews to the lecterns like the one over here against the wall that we have throughout the building in our classrooms. We have those who have put up bulletin boards and who have decorated those boards artistically and beautifully. We have a group who's been up here working already and will be working feverishly this next week in anticipation of our Vacation Bible School. Those throughout the years who have designed beautiful posters and wall hangings that we still use. Those who have provided with their hands the skill that's needed when we travel to Mexico twice a year to construct church buildings. I go along, and all I do is push a wheelbarrow and do the grunt work, and I'm amazed at those who have the skill to do all the areas of expertise. We have a group of ladies that meet here every week, and they're down in that sewing room, and they provide all kinds of beautiful handwork that bless people's lives in a variety of ways. And the list goes on and on. Those who are gifted with their hands, those who can create beautiful things. You know, when God gives us a talent, when God blesses us with a gift, it's a lot like electricity. God passes it down to us, and for it to benefit anyone, it must go full circle. We must pass that on, and then praise goes back to God, and God gives the ability, and we bless someone's life, and praise goes back to God. It's the way electricity works. It flows in from the wires into a house, and it goes through all the appliances and goes back out again. Now, if you short-circuit that, then the good is lost. I had an uncle who was a little bit sadistic, I've decided, because we used to go out in his field, and he had cattle, and he had an electric fence, and he delighted in getting my brother and I close enough to the fence that he could grab the wire and touch our ear. And when you short-circuit that electricity and ground it into someone else, I mean, you get a terrible shock, and the electricity doesn't really do what it was intended to do when you block that flow. Now, if we block the abilities that God has given us, if they terminate in ourselves, then all our lives will ever amount to is just a flash in the pan. We're gifted in order to give. We are blessed so that we, in turn, can bless the lives of others. We have been saved not as an end in itself. We have been saved in order to serve, in order to pass the blessings on that we have received. You know, these men did exactly that. Not only did they use their gifts unselfishly in the service of God, they passed their gifts on to others. I would imagine that someone who was a goldsmith of the caliber of Bezalel or Aholiab, they could have made a fine living. They could have stayed back in Egypt and enriched themselves with the abilities that they had. But these men, instead of cornering the market, instead of having a monopoly on hand-tooled goods that they sold themselves, they taught others. Look again in chapter 35, down in verse 34. It says, "And he has given both him and Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach of the tribe of Dan, the ability to teach others." Not only were these men gifted, they had the ability, and they did, in fact, teach others. And they had a whole crew that worked with them in the construction of the tabernacle. You know, one of the most valuable musical instruments that is in existence is that group of violins made by Stradivarius. And they have a tone that is unequaled by any other violin ever produced. The tragedy is that when Stradivarius died, he took the secret of the construction of those violins with him to the tomb. He didn't teach anyone else. You know, there's a Christian principle that's found throughout Scripture. We see it right here with these two men, and they're passing on the gifts that they learned. We're told in the New Testament that older women are to teach younger women to be keepers of the home, to love their husbands. We're told that young men are to be taught by older men. Teach faithful men who will in turn teach faithful men who will in turn pass it on to the next generation. The Christian life is all about passing on the gifts that God has given us to the next generation. It's like a torch in a relay race. And when people use their abilities like that, they are to that extent acting like God. You ever thought about it? God didn't have to do anything that He did on our behalf. God could have stayed in heaven. He could have enjoyed the praise of the angels around His throne for all of eternity. He could have kept His Son there and never had to go through the horrible sacrifice of the cross, but He didn't do that. God gave of Himself when it cost Him in a way that we cannot even fathom. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 9, it says, "He was rich, yet for your sakes He became poor, so that you through His poverty might be rich," speaking of Jesus. Not once did Jesus ever use His creative powers. I mean, look at these two men, Bezalel and Aholiab, how gifted they were. Look what Jesus could do. Jesus could change the elements. Jesus could still the storm. Jesus could heal the sick. All these wonderful gifts that were given Him by the Father. And never once, not once, did He ever use any of those gifts selfishly. He passed them on to others. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8, there's that familiar passage. And I want to read it from an unfamiliar translation this morning. It's the Phillips translation. So listen to what Philippians 2, 5 through 8 says in that translation. It says, "Let Christ Jesus be your example as to what your attitude should be. For He, who had always been God by nature, did not cling to His prerogatives as God's equal, but stripped Himself of all privilege by consenting to be a slave by nature and being born as a mortal man. And having become man, He humbled Himself by living a life of utter obedience, even to the extent of dying. And the death He died was the death of a common criminal." I think it's instructive that when God chose the human home that His Son would be born into, the home where Jesus would be raised there in Nazareth, He chose the home of a simple man and woman, a man who worked with his hands, a carpenter. And what lessons must have been instilled in young Jesus as he learned from this simple craftsman how to craft wood and work with it there in his father's shop. There's that old story of the two men who were working to build one of the massive cathedrals that dot the English countryside. And when someone asked one man, "What is it that you're doing?" He said, "Why, I'm cutting stone. I'm earning the food to feed my family with." And they ask another man, "What are you doing?" And with a glint in his eye, he said, I am glorifying God by building this massive cathedral." You know, it all depends on your attitude towards the work that God's given you to do. The passage that was read at the beginning is an important passage. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 11. Ken read it earlier. "Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody." There's no such thing as mundane work. There's no such thing as secular work when it's done to the glory and the honor of God. When there is an acknowledgement that whatever giftedness you have comes from God and that you're doing it to serve others. And I tell you, there's not a profession represented here this morning that is not something that in some way does not help and serve others and make this world a better place. It depends on the way we serve and our attitude. Thank God for the Bezalels and the Aholiabs who live in our world today, those who are able to take raw materials and turn them into things of beauty, those who are able by their gracious touch to turn a house into a home, and those who by their vocational skills are able to make life better and more pleasant for all. In 6 short days, God wove the tapestry of the countryside, and He carved the towering peaks of the mountains, and He scooped out the valleys where the oceans would flow. But He didn't do any of it just for Himself. It was an act of service, a home for the creation that He was about to bring about. And when we use the skills and the abilities that God has given us to serve others, we're acting just like our Father. With God, there's a power far greater than the electricity we use to illumine our homes and our buildings. And God has given us this power But for it to work, we must reach out to someone else. We are to be ambassadors for Christ. We're to pass on the power of the cross, the story of the cross, to others who have not experienced it. The greatest blessing that this world has ever known. This morning, God is extending His hand towards you, and He longs to have you in intimate fellowship with Him. The God who has served us through His Son Jesus. The one who said, I came not to be served, but to serve. This morning, if you're not a baptized believer, we would encourage you, strongly encourage you, to confess His name as you turn from sins and be baptized. If you're here this morning and you need the prayers of God's people for any reason, we would strongly encourage you to let that be known so we can pray for you before you leave today. If you need to come, won't you do that as we stand and as we sing?